And welcome to the Web Comics panel.
Yay!
Sunday, what more do you want from the poor bastards?
Yeah. Monday.
You've got a whole day
left.
No, it's
still Sunday. No, it's still Sunday. Don't fuck with me like that.
So what more do you want?
Monday.
You want it to be Monday.
Yeah.
No, I want like 12 hours sleep. That's what I really want. Sorry. Hi!
Hello.
Hi!
Why don't we introduce ourselves, starting on the end with Adam.
Way over here. I am Adam Withers, one half of the husband and wife duo Comfort and Adam. Comfort, the late Comfort Love, will be joining us shortly.
Don't do that.
As,
the late Comfort.
Somebody had to hold down the table or it would have run away. She's coming. Provided her sense of direction gets her to us properly. We are the co-creators of The Uniques and Rainbow in the Dark, a pair of long-form web-released comic series. We've been self-publishing since 2009 full-time and show no signs of slowing down.
My name is John Macho. I'm creator of Accidental Centaurs and currently doing a spin-off from the classic comic strip Nancy called Random Acts of Nancy. Thank you. Your check's in the mail. Oh, and by the way, I'm fighting for a charity also, the Human Fund, Money for People. See, no Seinfeld watchers in here. Boy, I'm getting old. Anyway.
Third the alternative.
So.
Oh.
Cute.
My name is Jenny Breeden. I draw satanic pornography. No, I'm actually lying a little-ish. My comic is called The Devil's Panties, and The Devil's Panties is actually a journal comic that my mom reads, and it's PG-13 due to harsh language because it's about my life and Dragon Con and all of that. I have a side, and Jesus and the devil show up and smoke pot, so it's only a little bit satanic. So then I started another comic called Id over on Filthy Figments, and that is porn, but it doesn't have any Satan in it, because he's more of a producer than an actor. So no, I do not have any satanic porn.
So that leaves one more comic for you to create.
Well, no, I'm just going to have Id wearing little horns and Ego going, what's with it? And she's like, it's an inside joke, it's okay. Mine is a gag-a-day comic. Mine is you jump in anywhere and the punchline is on the fourth panel and that's all you need to know. There's no plot for character development or, you know, and it posts every day.
And we do have kids in here.
Bye, Jenny. Bye. Good seeing you.
From now on, certain words will be substituted with fluffy bunny.
And I'm Bill Holbrook. I do Kevin and Kel, which debuted on September 4th, 1995. So it's a celebrating its 21st birthday, so it's out getting drunk right now.
Thank you for coming.
And do we have questions from the audience?
Well, I'm glad y'all came.
We're going to get to her, but I have a quick question for the audience. How many people here want to do a webcomic?
You poor, dumb, fluffy bunnies.
How many people here are doing a webcomic? Wow. Well, oh yeah. Well done. I am so sorry. Have you been doing a webcomic for a year? Oh, really? More than a year? Oh wow. Okay, yeah. Well, I mean, well done. Yes, no, stick with it. Okay.
No, I know the guy. No, I don't feel sorry for him.
So we had a question.
Yeah, I think it's as good as anything.
Well, hold on, microphone's coming.
Oh, that's nice.
Well, allegedly.
Which
coming.
End? Yeah.
Yeah, the thing is at the top.
Not on.
Oh. Technical difficulties.
This is the technical form.
What part of the box makes the box box?
Yeah.
There we go.
All the comments I can't say out loud about
Fluffy bunnies.
Okay, great.
There we go. Yay.
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 So I feel this is as good of a question as any to start with. Web comics are sort of a micromedia in that they are long form. So do you think it's important for someone who's doing a web comic and maybe releasing like an issue a week to make sure that each one of their, even if it's plot driven, to make sure each one of their pieces of media can be enjoyed as a solo piece?
Well, speaking of someone who is not following this rule, it's important to update frequently and regularly. A regular update will, lack of one, will kill you, because it has me. Yeah, you've got to establish, you've got to get into someone's habit, and you've got to get into the habit of being able to be part of someone's habit, so they know if it's Friday, the strip goes up, or whatever day you pick. So even whatever the frequency you pick, stick with it. So yes, absolutely.
And as far as standalone is concerned, or be part of continuity, that's totally up to you. Everyone has a different answer. I kind of mix things up between continuities and a week of standalone gags. I try not to have too much background needed for the reader to appreciate the material. I try to have as much exposition as possible without killing the joke. It just depends on each person's vision of how they want to do the strip.
Something to keep in mind, the difference between print media and webcomics is that in an action manga novel, there can be a fight scene that goes on for a chapter, two chapters, maybe a book, that's a little pushing it, but you can have page after page of just fighting with no dialogue or anything, and the person can flip through it and get to the dialogue. If you're doing a webcomic that's daily or weekly, if you have a 10-page long fight, that's over 2 months. If you're doing a weekly comic, you kind of have to get to the point. You could have maybe 2 or 3 days where you posted a comic a day of a fight scene, but then you got to actually get to some sort of speaking role. So yeah, you do have to pay attention to pacing and what kind of how much information you give the reader for each day. Now, once you go to print the book, yeah, you can slide a couple more pages in there.
Now, Comfort and I come at this from a completely different angle, being as we release chapters at a time. And for us, it is all about the long form. It is all about getting people engrossed in the story, and that is what brings them back and back and back. So I think that the most important thing to take from this is you have to know your format. You have to know what kind of comic you're trying to produce, what kind of readers you're trying to attract, and how to keep those readers interested over and over again, so that if you have a longer lapse between your releases, regular as they may or may not be, they'll be there. Something that the creator of Dresden Kodak said that has stuck with me for a long time was, if you have to be late, but always, always, always be good. Because people will remember you if it's amazing, but if you're always on time and just okay, they don't feel the need to come back. So you have to find that balance of timeliness and high quality that's going to keep the audience interested, whatever kind of format of release schedule you're looking to produce.
I'm gonna go ahead and contradict some of what you said.
Now, I'm at it.
Okay, everybody figures out how to do it their own way. That has worked. That is definitely something to live by and achieve. I go ahead and go for quantity over quality. I have had my brother come up to me and he goes, you know what, I don't identify with your comic. I am not a young college girl. I don't find it funny because I just don't identify with it. And he came back a year later and he goes, yeah, I don't think it's funny, but you post every day, so there's something different. Whenever I go there, I know there's going to be something different, so I still check it every day.
The habit.
Well, and then what drives me up the wall, which I think everybody has experienced as an artist, is that you put your soul into something that you think is amazing, and you post it, and it's crickets. And then I may have gone to a bachelorette party and gotten drunk and forgot to do a post. And so I took a Sharpie and kind of wrote on an envelope, I'm drunk. And kind of posted that, and people were like, that's hilarious. And it can get discouraging because I've posted things that I thought were throwaways, and people, it struck a chord, and people loved it. And then I've posted stuff that I thought had hit all the buttons, and I totally missed the mark. It's a learning curve. You learn as you go, you learn. And I never wrote for an audience. I've had people say, who's your target audience? And I had a convention where I had 16-year-old girls come up and say, oh, this is totally me. I had housewives, I had bikers. I had a football player walk up and go, I love your comic. Me and all my dance troupe thinks it's hilarious. So I had no idea what my target audience was because it's the internet, and they eventually found me, but it is very difficult for me to try to look for advertising places because I don't know where to put it.
Yeah, some of the best some of the most lucrative web comics were gamer comics, Pepe Arcade PvP, because they had a built-in advertising base. Advertisers knew that this is how to reach gamers. And when you have a focused strip on a specific audience, advertisers love that. If you're doing a general interest strip that has a large range of ideas and issues, it's just whatever comes into our head at the time, that's hard to advertise for. There's no one demographic that's being tried to reach there as far as the advertisers are concerned.
I have a question for the audience. Would you like us to talk a little bit about how to draw the comic and post it on the internet? Or if you've already got your comic posted on the internet and drawn, advertising or merchandising or how to money at it, which I'm still trying to figure out.
Yeah, that's going to be a short panel.
Do we talk about the stuff we all know how to do or the stuff nobody knows how to do?
Phrased like that. I didn't know how far along people were in the process.
It's good to know.
Drawing it or posting it. And I phrased that poorly because now everyone's like, well, I know what you... Yeah. Okay, so number one, do you want us to talk about making and posting the comic?
Yes.
Okay. How about, because I mean, we can go on.
Sure.
Let's do all of it. How do you make
sharpen a pencil? Yeah. Okay. It starts with sharpening a pencil.
Still use a pencil?
Actually, we don't. Starting this year, we don't. We've gone full digital for the first time. So, we make comics, Comfort and I make comics. While our collaboration is unusual, we write everything together, we draw everything together, color together, letter together, and self-publish together. The actual production style is very similar to traditional comics. We work full pages, we work full scripts, we work full chapters at a time, with the ultimate goal, knowing that this is going into print, knowing eventually we want this in comic stores. We tried to, in the beginning, plan for what that eventual end goal was going to look like. And in order to make sure that we could attract both the audience on the web that we were trying to draw in, and be able to be attractive on the newsstand with a bunch of other graphic novels in the long run, we tried to find what we thought would be the best answer to both, and that was to treat web comics more like traditional comics that release digitally more frequently and to a different degree of craftsmanship. So it's full script writing, draw it a page at a time. It's very assembly line-like, honestly.
I do some digitally, I do some traditionally. I go back and forth between which is better because I've got a teeny tiny little Cintiq in it and I get tired of it every now and then. But for me, it starts with a script, and the script is basically I'll write an outline of what the story is going to be, and then I'll basically do my script in layout form. I don't write a screenplay style script. I lay it out, lay out how the panels are going to lay out, how the composition of each shot, and then basically transfer that to paper or to in Clip Studio Pro, which is what I use to draw in, and then digitally finish it up from there. I'll then export it. When I post a single full comic page, then at the end of it, I'll bundle it all up into a book or to a comic book, send that off to. I use a printer called Greco, which is up in Michigan. They do an amazing job and quick turnaround too. And then bring them out here for nobody to buy. Boo-hoo.
Buy his stuff.
and then I'll do digital versions. I'll do a Kindle version because I have a Kindle digital publishing account. I do a PDF version that I sell directly on my website, and an ebook version that I really don't really sell because nobody reads comics on ebooks. So that's it. This one's going to take a while.
No. It's just one word each. Sorry, I was.
Oh wow, she's got notes.
No. I already said that. So I start with a piece of copy paper, and I will take a pen, and I will do a stick figure comic of an idea, and I'll just write it out. And I'll do 3 comics per page, and I'll try to do about 6 comics, sitting in a coffee shop, wherever. And some of them, at one point, I just was drawing stick figures, and I had one stick figure holding a square that said butts. And then I got into idea about censorship. So, I mean, stream of consciousness, just kind of getting a thought out into a physical, because you'll be amazed at kind of what congeals. And then I'll hand those pages to my husband and I'll say, hey, honey, what's funny? And he'll read through it and he'll do a check or an X or a squiggle. And he'll be like, I don't understand what you're saying here. Because if you hand your comic strip to somebody else, and you can't say, well, this is somebody who's running through a doorway. They're like, I don't see the door, I don't know what's going on. And if you can explain it, and if you can illustrate it as a stick figure, then you've communicated it, you're good. And then he'll mark which ones are good, or we'll try to figure out a better punchline, and then I will I'll sketch it out on, again, it's just 8.5 by 11. I'll actually put 3 strips on one page, so they're actually 8 inches wide, and I will pencil the comic 8 inches wide, and so I can do it in like 20 minutes. I will scan both of those in, and I will save them in files at high resolutions, and then later I will post those sketches and stick figures on Patreon behind a paywall. People actually like the stick figures more, and that pisses me off. They're like, oh my god, the facial expressions are better than your final.
Which you sweat over.
Yeah. So I will scan them in, I will use Photoshop for lettering and layout, I will use Manga Studios for inking. I've got templates to just kind of get it done faster. It takes me about 3 hours to do a full comic. I will use Comic Press to post it online. I will archive it at 600 dpi, black and white, and I will post it at 72 dpi. I didn't know this the first year that I did a comic, and so when I went to print, I had to redraw a year's worth of comic strips. Took me a while. I use Comic Press to post it because they have an automatic posting system. Pretty much everyone's using them, so you can look at other websites and see how you like the layout and set it up. I have bought the URL, and I have a website that has advertising, and then I take the comic and I will aggregate it to Facebook and Twitter and Tumblr and I will link all of them back. I'll write the URL on the comic strip itself. So if somebody shares the comic strip on Tumblr, you can still find the original website where I can get advertising revenue. I will then kind of do a teaser on Instagram. I will try to do some sort of Snapchat thing. I'm trying to learn Snapchat. Whatever the kids are using.
Which in 24 hours.
Filters. And then later on in the day, I will actually go, I have a Devil's Panties Twitter account and a Jenny Vrieden Twitter account. Sometimes I will share my own comic on Twitter, and then that gets more people to the website itself. A very bizarre social media. I had somebody come up and go, oh yeah, I read you every day on Facebook. And I'm like, yeah. I don't get advertising revenue from that. And then I use Project Wonderful for advertising sometimes. Look up Patreon and Kickstarter for money. Yeah.
One quick question. You said you do your writing in coffee shops. Where do you find a coffee shop in Portland?
Well, what you need is the slow roaster beans, and you have to get the growler of the brewery that's next door and make sure that they have the airport carpeting down in front, because then you know it's an authentic. Oh, wait, no, I can't tell you about that one.
Love and Buddies.
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry.
Oh, I basically sit in my basement for 4 or 5 hours with a legal pad, and somehow at the end of that time I have some jokes written on paper. I will show them to my wife, who rates them with a 1, which means it's usable, or a 2, which means don't use this. That's a process that we can't describe any further because I don't understand it myself. But I can understand what happens next, which is me actually doing the creation of the drawings, which first I start with the lettering, which I do by hand still. I don't use a font, I just letter by hand as I've always done, because I'm still writing as I letter. And when I finish lettering, I know how much room I have left on the page for the artwork. And I then put my piece of paper on top of my original pencil sketch and ink over that, tracing, as they say so very often, and then scan that at 600 DPI into Photoshop and then clean that up. So I have a camera-ready piece of artwork, which I then send to Terrence and Isabel Marks, who are very talented web comics in their own right, who do the coloring on Kevin and Kel. After that, it's uploaded to the Kevin and Kel site for my few readers to see. I keep about a 2-month schedule, so I'm writing now around Halloween. People all ask me, how do you keep a buffer? Well, I started out with a 2-month schedule, and I've just kept it ever since.
Since 1984?
Pretty much.
What one important thing that was mentioned, I didn't mention in mine, was when I do my script, I send it off to some people for them to get feedback. Feedback on whatever you're working on is vital, because you don't see the problems. Yeah. Especially in the first draft, you may get this and you think, Shakespeare couldn't have written this. And then it comes back and they say, Ed Wood couldn't have written this. and it'll help you find and help you refine. If you're doing jokes, it'll help you refine your jokes, find out what's funny, what's not. It'll help you refine your story, tighten it up, find the plot holes. You say, this, what happened to, why did you leave Barb out there to die? You know, that sort of thing. And it'll help you to find those holes that you don't see because you're so close to it. That is a very, very important part of writing. Writing is both individual and collaborative, both.
Even Comfort and I, who collaborate on all of our scripts, still use a robust editorial system, because the two of us talk together about our stories so much. We develop our own language for what these stories are about. And we don't know how well we're communicating those ideas until somebody else has read the script and told us if they can understand any of it or not.
And sometimes our editors tell us, you know, we don't know what we're talking about. For because of our editors, we did go back in to say Rainbow in the Dark, which is one of our series, and we made the last issue, instead of 32 pages long, it turned into 68 pages long, because we love our stories, but we hate ourselves, and our editors know what they're talking about.
Actually, in college, and I was supposed to do a self-portrait for a painting class, and I couldn't, something was wrong, and I couldn't tell what it was, so I brought it out to the living room to my housemates, and I said, hey, I can't figure out what's wrong with this painting. I've been working on it for like 12 hours, and my roommates kind of look at me and look at the painting and go, you forgot to draw your nose. I honestly didn't notice.
Kathy Geiswide had that same experience for about 30 years.
Yeah.
Any questions?
So, what would you say the biggest difference between drawing and writing comics in a digital format is between that and print media? And how do you use that difference or play with it in making web comics?
Actually, I do draw for print also, and I've been doing on the Fast Track and Safe Havens when I created Kevin and Kel, but one of the reasons I started doing Kevin and Kel to take advantage of the online medium was that they had the existence of archives, and you can't do a long story on a newspaper strip because the newspaper is gone the next day. Readers miss a day, they lose a thread in the story, they can't go back and see what happened. But in online, you have archives that can stretch back years, and therefore, you never lose the reader. You can do longer, more complicated stories, and that's why I created Kevin and Kel in the first place, for that very reason.
I'm going to be honest with you guys. If you're doing your own stories and stuff like that, you're going to be making them, if you're smart, for both print and digital, and here's why. You like money. And because you like money, you want to sell these things in whatever format possible. So you're looking for something that's a happy marriage of the two. Like once upon a time when computer screens were just square, you'd have to do things to accommodate that. But since our computer screens or tablets or whatever can be about any size they need to be, you need to look at what other print options versus your online options you have and marry those two in something that's awesome for both media.
But I would like to reiterate what you were saying about the digital. The web means people can find anything anytime.
Sure.
And that creates problems you might not think about. We are currently in the process of releasing an extended director's cut of our series, The Uniques.
Which originally released in 2008, when we first started doing this.
And when we knew nothing about what the hell we were doing. Mistakes were made. And after we had left Uniques to do Rainbow in the Dark, we decided we wanted to come back and continue the story. But the problem was, Rainbow got a lot of attention. Got a very wide release. It was all over the place, you know, award nominations, crazy, like, woo, stuff. People knew us for Rainbow in the Dark first and foremost. And if we started doing more Uniques, people would be like, well, I'm gonna start at number one. And they can, because it's out there, because everything's out there forever online. And they would go back to our 2008 work, not realizing in their heads that it was 2008 work, and say, well, why is their second thing not as good as their first thing? Even though it was our first thing, they don't know. So in order to get people along the ride for the story of Uniques, we had to go back to those first things that we had done so long ago and lift them up to a level of production quality that matches what we're doing now. Extending them, making them worth it, so that when people start at number one, which they're going to do regardless, they'll want to continue on until they get to the best stuff.
But I've got a friend who, a year later, his work had gotten better. And so he went back and he redid the first chapter and then caught up. And then the second year, his work got better. True. He hasn't gone beyond the first chapter
yes.
in 10 years.
Yeah,
because he keeps going back and redoing it.
Art is never finished, only abandoned.
Right. The point is not to redo until it's perfect. The point is people are going to find your bad stuff no matter what you think. So be ready in the beginning.
Don't be George Lucas.
No.
Don't keep special editioning forever, but do think about when you're getting started, don't rush yourself. Take your time to make it good before you start releasing it to the public. Make sure that your first step out the door is the best step you can make so you don't have to look back later, or at least you can forgive yourself for not looking back later.
So the quick comment about printing, I messed up and didn't think about a printed book, and now the cheapest printing and the most common, I use CreateSpace to print my books. They're print on demand, it's Amazon, and if you use a standard book size, then they can make that book available in libraries and bookstores, and you upload your file and they go, well, okay, the sizing's off, and fix this and this, and fix that, and they go, okay, that's good. It's printable. You get a proof for $3. You go, okay, that looks good. Change it. And then they go, okay, it's done. You press on, and that day it's available for Barnes & Noble to order. But only if it's in a standard book size. A graphic novel, according to Amazon, is not a standard book size. So go do a Google search and check for, I want to see it.
Those services are really aimed more at people who are publishing a novel. They're really aimed at text. Because CreateSpace, there's like a limit to the size of the file, maximum file size.
Yeah, we got,
which we don't have. I use Lulu. Lulu doesn't have a maximum file size. I would love to use CreateSpace, but if you're doing stuff in color, you know, you're going to hit that that very, very quickly. Which is why, unfortunately, my color books are like $40 a piece because it's print on demand. Your stuff being in black and white, you can scooch under that.
I tried doing color for a while and it looked terrible. But I would save a color file and I would also save a black and white file so I could print.
Just as a quick thing for color and stuff like that, we're talking about print-on-demand versus offset printing. There's two different things there. So print-on-demand is great, and it's awesome for you guys starting out. That means that print-on-demand, very affordable, but everything costs the same cost. So I could get 1,000 or...
Yeah, when you go to a full offset printer, that's the giant machines that fill up this whole room and they run off thousands of pages at a time, and the more you print, the cheaper it gets.
You're getting economy of scale.
Exactly.
What it
is. But if you ask one of those guys to print you like 20 copies, it's going to cost a fortune to spur all that machine up just for a handful of copies.
So if you want to eventually be selling through Diamond, which is the one place that sells through comic shops and stuff like that, you really do need to look into an offset run, but you gotta get yourself there. Just as a quick thing, it may cost me a lot to do, say, one omnibus of Rainbow in the Dark through print on demand, and that's like $35. But if I do an offset run of it, it's $5 each, but I do have to spend $10,000 to do that print run. So you gotta know that you can sell thousands of copies before you do the big stuff.
And you have a place to put thousands
of
copies.
Yes,
exactly.
Yeah.
Big basement. Barn.
So otherwise it becomes furniture.
Oh, yeah. Now I actually am in Diamond and I use CreateSpace. So, and the good thing about that is, okay, we're getting off topic though. We're talking about webcomics. No, stop talking about printing. Let's go back to, because, okay, so if we were in the beginning, we actually had a question. Yeah.
This is actually about the beginning of how to start a comic. In the beginning, starting a webcomic, I know you guys probably started with different programs than you're using now because there's different ones available. But what programs and what mediums would you recommend for someone starting a webcomic?
Manga Studio.
Manga Studio is the best for digital drawing that we've found.
It's called Clip Studio Paint now.
Which is a terrible name.
But it's an awesome program.
That's actually the Japanese name.
Yeah.
There is programs that can make your own font.
Yes, this is true.
And they're cheap now.
Yeah.
There's actually online services where you just go on in and they'll
I forget. My husband found it for me.
So for drawing,
just search Google
for
fun.
For color, we still like Photoshop. A lot of people like Paint Tool Sai to speak really well for that. Color is an evening playing field right now. There's a lot of people getting involved in the digital color game, doing a pretty good job of it. We used to say Photoshop or bust, but at this point, that's not really the case anymore. We still like it because that's what we learned and we know a lot of tricks that way, but if you have another program that's working for you, then it's working for you. Use that.
Yeah. I use Photoshop because I've been using Photoshop since version 2.5 before it had layers. I still have old sweats from that. It was under Windows 3.
Oh, man.
Oh, my. Yeah. You kids, your manga studio. We didn't have layers and we liked it that way. Nobody liked it that way. That's why they added layers.
There was no undo.
We had to start over from scratch and we were happy to do it. I've been using Photoshop since then. I've started using Manga Studio. Clip Studio Pro has got some amazing tools. The rulers, the rulers, being able to use perspective rulers are just amazing.
Yeah, but then you can just fall down the rabbit hole.
And then you fall down a rabbit hole and the next thing you know.
Perspective, it's just one panel.
Here's the trick with not falling down the rabbit hole with the perspective rulers and stuff. First thing you do is quick sketch out what you want that panel to be.
Yeah.
And only then do you use the rulers to tighten that sketch down. Yeah. And not adding all kinds of embellishment. Just take that initial layout you had in mind and tighten it so it's crisp and clean, and that's all.
The advantage of Clip Studio Pro is that it was designed for comics creation. Photoshop is for photo manipulation, hence the name Photoshop. In fact, the very first thing that it was ever used for was to composite animation for the movie The Abyss at ILM. So it's a photo manipulation program that just happens to have these tools that are applicable to comics creation. Manga Studio, especially for inking, is designed specifically for. And also doing halftoning and things like that.
Right.
It was designed for that. So it's a great program for that. It's relatively inexpensive. It comes in two different levels. And the lower level has got all of the drawing engine tools and everything, so you can see if you really want it before you go up to the upper level. And it's not that expensive.
It's really not, honestly.
The high end is $300.
If you follow their Twitter account, there are almost always
Smith
sales.
Micro offers sales on that,
all
and their
the
animation
time.
Software too, all the time.
It's
as
really
well.
Good. So we got a copy of the full Clip Studio program for like $120. Compare that with how long you'd have to pay monthly for the Photoshop, and it makes a difference real quick.
Yeah, that's 2 months of Photoshop, by the way.
So the other thing is that don't necessarily think. My comic isn't going to be good unless I spend hundreds of dollars on it. When it comes down to it, the most popular comic on the internet is a stick figure.
Yes.
When it comes down to it, it's just your idea. And I've had times when I've had to take, didn't have my scanner, so I've taken a picture of my sketch with my phone and I've worked with that. So when it comes down to it, get your idea, put it in some sort of form that people can communicate.
They're just tools.
These are
just tools. That's all they are. And there's always going to be an alternative. You could go and download GIMP for free. Granted, it doesn't have all the bells and whistles, and some people will say, well, it doesn't feel like Photoshop. No, because it's not Photoshop. But it works. Like Guy Gilchrist, who I work with on Nancy, Random Acts of Nancy, who was the original artist for Muppets comic strip and Muppet Babies, created Muppet Babies and co-created Fraggle Rock. That's what he uses. He uses GIMP. Now he draws everything traditionally, but to create his scans and to upload and to prepare it, he uses GIMP because he doesn't need Photoshop. So it just depends on what works for you. And Photoshop is pretty pricey. Adobe just really.
Shall we take another question?
Yeah, before we start on Adobe.
Over here.
Yeah.
Thank you for talking about the technical side. I really do appreciate that.
Oh, hold on, microphone's coming. There we go.
But one of the things I wanted to ask is, so when you're first starting out, you know, posting onto your own website can be very difficult and won't really get much traffic. So what would be some sites you would recommend to get a lot of people looking at your comics and get a lot of feedback from your first beginning?
Well, so any social media.
Yeah, any social media. Tumblr is great.
Tumblr is great. And I think the best response to any question about where should I be posting about my comic is everywhere. Any place you can be, anywhere you can go, go there and talk about it. Because you don't necessarily know who your audience is going to be right away.
Put some panels of it on Instagram and have a link to your site. You know, the social media stuff is about getting people to the main feed. And the main feed may be Tumblr. A lot of things like Yale Stewart, who does JLA, main site was Tumblr for a long time.
There's a lot of people who use Tumblr.
So, you know, just as long as you get people where you need them to be, always make sure there's a link, get them excited, bring them where they need to go.
Put share buttons on the site.
Share buttons.
All the share buttons. Make it easy for somebody to be like, oh my God, this is funny.
Make it difficult for them not to share it.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Just.
Because the only thing better than you talking about it everywhere is other people talking about it everywhere.
We put a Reddit button on the website, and it's very few times that somebody will share it on, click that share button on Reddit, but when they do. but always put the URL back on, because the worst feeling is if a comic explodes and there's no information on how to get back to your website. That it gets shared and it gets sent out there and everybody goes, oh, this is hilarious, and there's no way for them to find the rest of your work. So put that URL in there.
Other questions?
So on the subject of funding related to the online available tools, you're talking about ad revenue. How do RSS feeds interact with, say, ad revenue, where people get the, for example, the entire comic email to them?
Basically, I don't have an RSS feed. I just have Google Ads on my site. I really don't rely much on ad revenue to keep Kevin Keller going. I rely on patrons, which I've been doing since 2001. That's the revenue stream that does keep it going.
I don't do RSS feeds either. Never have. Always found them, to me personally, kind of cumbersome to use. So I never fiddled around with it way back when before Amazon. But it never really, it would always seem to me kind of more of a solution in search of a problem.
Good question.
You try it out and get back with us.
Yeah.
And then next year you get up here and you explain what you did.
So I use Patreon. And one of the levels, level number one, $1, thank you very much. Level two, $3, I will send a URL that will take out all the advertisements on the site. And for $3 a person, I can afford to go, here's where you can read it with no advertisements. And it'll load a lot faster. Archive Binge makes it faster. And so as far as, I mean, I'm assuming that your concern is that if people are using RSS feed, then that takes away from your ad revenue. And so it's a way to offset that cost. And so, yeah, the way to...
Just to build on what you were saying, is if you can do get people to pay you not to see advertising, people will. Because I've several services, and these are not webcomic services, but like for example, YouTube Red, it is so worth it to me to pay $8 a month not to sit through a video every time I click on something on YouTube. So I still like it because the people who are monetizing their videos still get their monetization out of me. They're just getting it out of that $8 a month. I just don't have to sit through ads that why are you showing me this ad?
Again and again,
and it's the same ad 30 times. Patreon is a great way of being able to do that because you can feed things out exclusively to your patrons, and that kind of acts like an RSS feed in a way that they're paying for to get exclusive access, get it early, get exclusive content, get, like you said, special links so that you can get discounts on merchandise or ad-free on the site or whatever, that's a great way of doing that, and in turn still handle the, get you the monetization that you need in order to, you know, keep things going.
Any other questions?
So I had a question more from the art side, and I know there's no way I'm the only person with this problem, but when I'm trying to draw something, it varies in degrees, but on most occasions, I would literally rather die than draw a background.
Heads, hands, and feet. Oh, God.
Yeah. I would rather draw 1,000 hands than a single tree. So my question is either A, how do you trick yourself into not despising every second of drawing a background? Or how do you get away with not doing it without looking lazy?
There's a difference between a small format comic strip and the large format that you work in.
Yeah.
One of the great advantages of the small format is you can get away with as little background as you want. You could literally have just a figure talking to another figure with no background at all. None of us are ever going to be as rich as Jim Davis. His background is
Jack
just
Davis.
The Garfield.
Oh, Garfield, I'm sorry. Well, Jack Davis had great backgrounds too.
I'm talking about the guy who has no background.
Oh, okay.
He has
you're right.
Horizontal.
You're right. You're right. Yeah.
That's his background. And
sometimes foreground.
Yeah. And we'll never be as rich as he will, and because he's a multi-billionaire or something. He's never drawn a background. So that's the difference between comic strips and the large format.
Now there are still tricks with larger format works. The establishing shot is the panel on the page, or the panel in the scene, that establishes where we are right now. It gives us the who, what, when, where, and why of the moment, so that the reader is in one panel caught up with exactly where we are, who is there, what are they doing, and why do we care, and then we can follow and read the rest of that scene. Now, if you do a good enough establishing shot up front, you can go essentially backgroundless for many panels after that, and the audience remembers. You just have to keep putting in new establishing shots, either every page if you're doing it that way, or if you're doing like the endless scroll style comics, then think of it like every 5 or 6 rows of panels. You need another establishing shot because your audience are children and they will wander into traffic if you don't take their hand and walk them where they're stopping.
Now, just really quick, artists, I know you don't like drawing backgrounds, and this is for everybody. I have to do backgrounds all the time. Do I love it? No, I do not. But you gotta do it, and the more you do it, the easier it will be. Just like drawing faces, drawing hands, drawing whatever. It is the repetition that makes you better. It's the time that you put in is the work and the skill that comes out.
What I have said for a very long time is that an artist is not defined by how well they draw the stuff they love drawing. An artist is defined by how well they draw the stuff they hate drawing. Because anybody can just doodle in their sketchbook all day for fun. But this is a real job, and you have to treat it like a real job. You have to be professional that way. And I really admire the people who can get in there and make those amazing backgrounds, because God bless them.
I hate crowd shots where there's a lot of... So what I'll do, just so I force myself to do it, is throw in little jokes. Like these characters over here, they're the Three Stooges, or these are the Alfred E. Newman's over here, or throw in little get just for you, just to keep your interest up, and see if anybody notices.
We'll use friends of ours, people we know,
exactly.
Put them in crowd shots. Actually, this could be something you open up as a patron tier, pledge this month, and we'll put you in a background shot.
And different tiers, you can actually put them in as not just in the background, a character, a walk-on, a speaking role,
how
whatever.
How would you like to die in this issue?
I mean,
costs way more to die. You only get to die once.
Yeah.
Unless this is a zombie book, in which case, marvels.
Other questions?
I had a professor at college because I went to
I have a degree in comic books. I went to Savannah College for art design, and I have a sequential art degree.
It's like Portland East, isn't it?
Oh, no, it's deep south. So I had a professor who said, you got to approach the detail, and so the page, like filet mignon and potatoes, that you don't want to eat an entire dinner of just filet. I kind of do. You need that simple basic to kind of cleanse the palate. So if you have an entire page of nothing but intense detail, your eye is just going to glaze over. It's all going to turn gray. You need somewhere for the eye to rest. You need that really simple. In manga, you have really, really simple. And then if they look at something, that's the detail comes in. If they look at the sword, then suddenly it's this gem encrusted. But other than that, it's, you know, very basic. So with backgrounds, you got the one that's the detailed background. And then, yeah, everything else is just a
John Frank Lucy does the same thing. You don't really see the boogers until the close-up. So.
And then you get the foghorn.
Yeah.
Over here?
One of the things that hasn't been talked about yet is the almost immediate feedback that you get from the fans on electronic format. What are some of the highs and lows that y'all have had from that immediate feedback?
Everybody looks over at Janet.
Oh my God. That fear keeps me from being too lazy. I have gotten a lot better. I'm trying to remember, we didn't have as much feedback in the beginning because nobody really knew what webcomics were. And now, oh my God, everyone has an opinion. So I will actually go and I will Google something. I will make sure that I have the right spelling, the right phrasing, the right what the thing looks like. I will make sure that the hole is on the right side, that the handle is in the right place, because people will let me know.
You know Weird Al's song, Word Crimes?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Those people.
Yeah. And the thing is, unfortunately, if you make an honest mistake, you have somebody who goes, hey, did you notice that you made this mistake? And you're like, oh my God, yeah, that's... And then somebody won't read the comments, and somebody, and you got 12 people.
And they all think they're the ones who discovered.
Yeah.
The first one. Yeah.
And on the reverse side, if you do the research, I did one where I'm climbing a stack of paperwork because I'm trying to buy a house, and it's just this entire, and I wanted a reference of climbing. And so I looked on that. Google image search is your friend, and sometimes it's a horrible place. And so I did a comic based on, I did the illustration based on that. I didn't realize I had drawn climbing shoes, and I had all these people go, you climb, what do you climb, what do you do? And it became this, like, it kind of went a little bit viral in the climbing community. And so that can help and hinder you as far as making sure that you research enough before you post it. So you don't have somebody who goes, well, actually, that's not the exact.
Well, it goes the other way too, though, because you never know who is going to be really happy to see that detail brought to life. You know, people who have backgrounds involving these little things that are just incidental moments in your comic, but because you got that detail right, suddenly your comic is one of their favorites. Because nobody gets that thing right.
Now, for us, a lot of times we get, like, emails, like 4 a.m. emails, where somebody, because a lot of people can just get a whole big omnibus of Rainbow, like, either on Comixology or from us, you know, at a con or whatever, and we get, like, we had this email up from a girl once who read it and was like, oh my God, this is my favorite book ever. Like, the main love story is about two girls, and she's like, I just came out yesterday and I bought this book, and this book is so meaningful to me right now in this moment. Words cannot describe, and we get this long, awesome email. And that is the other thing that you can get. So it's not just the nitpicky things, it's the amazing, in the moment, emotional reactions that make you feel like, yeah, that's why I do this.
Yeah, a lot of people talk about the internet in terms of the knee-jerk reactionaries, but sometimes you get knee-jerk love that is really nice to receive.
Yeah, I just had, and Kevin and Kel this past week, two minor characters broke up the relationship, and I was surprised at the Kevin and Kel site's comment section. Hundreds of comments commenting about these characters, people had become invested in them, and they were, I said minor characters, they weren't, you know, the major characters, but people were, got emotional over them. That's kind of what we hope for.
But it can also be a curse.
It could. All it's two sides of the same coin.
All I have to say is Danielle.
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, well, that, it was through Kevin and Kel I first heard the term trigger warning. Just to leave that there.
Yeah.
So you've got to, sometimes you have to separate yourself from the fans, from the work. You have to recognize that sometimes they're not talking about you. You're going to get a troll. You're gonna get somebody who says you suck.
Oh yes.
Oh yeah. And you're gonna get somebody who just kind of just smears something all over your comment section. And go ahead and I'll read something and I'll go, oh sweetie, you're having issues. This has nothing to do with me. That They're just finding somewhere to vent, and you have the biggest soapbox that they can get and jump on right then. Or they'll say, well, I didn't agree with what you did with this character. You didn't write that right. You're not writing the story right. You have to go, somebody has to, what, one writer, somebody said, somebody should kidnap her kid and make her write it the way it should be written.
Yeah.
You don't really read the script, do you, buddy?
You know. Well, so when some people, when somebody emails you or comments and they go, well, you know, I like your stuff, but this part just, you didn't, you know, it's not, I don't like it. I kind of have to step back and go, well, you are entitled to your opinion, and I'm sorry you feel that way.
I'm sorry you're wrong.
Too bad. I kind of, you have to pace yourself in, as far as what you're willing to change, how much you're willing to give up to, because that way can lie madness. If you're like, oh, okay, they wanted the character to go this way, I'll go this way, or oh, they thought it should go this way, I'll go this way. And it can become, I have a friend that she, her readers kind of wore her down, and she didn't want to do it anymore, and she ended it, she walked away. She just didn't want to deal with it anymore, because they kept yelling at her about how she was doing it wrong, or she should have done it differently. So yeah, put it out there, listen to your fans, listen to the readers, and take the feedback, because that can affect how you develop a character. That can affect how, you know, the insight they have. You're like, oh, that's, ooh, I didn't even think of it that way. And
good artist copy, great artist steal.
Okay. But put up a little buffer as far as how much you're willing to let them hurt you.
You've got to believe in yourself to do this. Because the rest of the world doesn't, basically. Your parents won't. Mom.
If you're working with another person, so you're starting out and you like drawing and your best friend has a writing idea and you're gonna work together in high school or in college or your sibling or your best friend, write up a quick contract. Just write down, hey,
contracts keep friends.
Because life is long. Things happen, things change.
And so are memories.
One of you will be way more invested in it than the other. One of you might put down a payment for a printing, or put down the money for the hotel room, for the convention, for the table. And the other one might decide they're going to wander the convention, and they'll wander back to the table and go, so how much did we make? And I get 50% of that. Well, yeah, but you have to pay me back for the hotel and the table and the food and the gas money. So, just put it up front, write it down, make sure you know who owns the property, who can use the property.
We used a marriage contract.
Don't do that. Although my husband hasn't finished signing the release form that I gave him 7 years ago.
He writes really slow.
I also changed his name in the comics.
We have time for one more question.
Hello, yes. So I'm a strong believer that a mentor will definitely get you in the right direction. The five of you are great at what you do, but the closer to the end game that you can find someone doing this, what you want to do, I believe the more successful you can be. I do have a webcomic I want to begin in the realm of music. Amongst your social friends, who do you know that is doing what you're doing, specifically in the context of music and entertainment?
Oh, we do a whole comic that uses music as a motif.
Yeah, Rainbow in the Dark is like a rock opera comic. The point was to try and bring the musical feel into comics.
Music is a tough thing, but the way that we dealt with it is that, you know, as the characters go from black and white into color.
And just periodically and through periodically. Dialogue, we worked song lyrics into the dialogue. Because when I'm talking to somebody and they say something that reminds me of words from the song, I get that song in my head real strong. So we wanted to try and create a subliminal soundtrack and give people music while they read a book and see if that could cross over that silent medium.
I don't do anything with music because I, when I was in high school, they passed ordinances in my town to keep me from playing my saxophone. So, but more important thing I think that you mentioned was about a mentor. And someone who has been there, has been in the trenches, to give you encouragement, help you find those the landmines before you step on them. I mean, mine is right up here on this table, and it's Bill Holbrook.
It's not. Yeah,
no. I mean, I started doing a webcomic, and I advertised on Kevin and Kel, and my readership went through the roof to the point that it actually knocked my web server off the air. This is back in those days when do that. And I met with Bill. Bill and I became friends, and Bill's been a big encouragement. He encouraged me to join first the Southeast chapter of the National Cartoonist Society, then helped me get into the National Cartoonist Society itself, and then let me publish his books for a few years. I wouldn't be doing Nancy and doing what I'm doing now if it wasn't for Bill. So thank you, Bill.
Well, you're welcome.
Thank you, Bill.
Well, thank you for... He bought money to advertise on my site, so thank you.
but seriously, find, if you're interested in doing a webcomic, whether it's someone that doing a webcomic in your area or not, it's a good idea, webcomics that you like, get in contact with those with the creator of it and explain to them that you're interested in it. And because we all love it. People say, I love your comic, you've inspired me, and picking our brains. We love talking shop about stuff.
And conventions are a great place to do it too, because you've got a lot of creators in a confined space and they can't run away.
Right,
you can see if they're ignoring
the message. Especially if they're in between two, because they're kind of trapped on both sides.
Yeah. So bring your portfolio, talk to the people, and get feedback. We're happy to do it. We wouldn't be who we are if it wasn't for
guys
at conventions who are willing to look at our stuff and tell us in which manner we suck.
And we love to do it. And we love our medium. And we love it when someone's interested enough to want to get into it, poor dumb fluffy bunnies they may be. We do love that.
So go to meetups. Go to where your peers are. Other people who are trying to start a web comic, already did a comic. Atlanta has a huge amount of comic meetups. Go to forums, but mostly, you know, go to the coffee shops and say, post somewhere and say, hey guys, anybody doing artwork and stuff, let's all meet up at a coffee shop and suffer together. We are all in the
Artist Alley.
Okay, the Artist Alley is in the America's Mart.
Building 2.
Outer Mongolia.
Floor 3. There is more than one floor on the America's Mart. We're on the third floor.
Third floor.
And I'm on aisle K.
The three of us are right across from each other.
Fine, I see how it is.
We are all on, there's two sides, and I think it's
so
important.
There's one side of the hall that has a bunch of stand-up arcade games. We're on the opposite side.
So all of us, and we're all across from each other.
Yeah.
So
if you swing a dead cat, you'll hit all of us.
Clutch.
Except me, you gotta Except throw Jenny. The dead cat. Except
Jenny. So, Section H, non-video game side, and then Jenny's in Section I.
K, non-video game side.
So all on Sans video game side.
And
if you have any more questions, send us emails.
Or come by our tables.
Yes, we're here all day tomorrow, as long as it's open.
10 to 5.
So there you go.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.